Miss Bobbi Johnson, you are back in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. We've done this a couple times before, and I've sat on the episodes because it just didn't feel like the right time to launch. I think it's the right time now. There's a lot of stuff going on that we'll talk about today, and the timing seems right. So first things first, introduce yourself, and then let's get off to it.
I'm Bobbi Johnson. I've been here for 30 years, and it's changed considerably.
Your breadth of experience is huge, and there's not really anyone around here, or very few people, we could definitely say that, who have seen what you've seen between the changes in the community and all the experiences you've had from just so much stuff. You've been in plane crashes, for goodness sakes. You've been in one plane crash, which is enough, in my opinion. But you set up here early. So can you tell us your intro story, just how you came in and what it was like when you first got here?
My husband and I came in 1989 for vacation. We'd been living on a sailboat for 11 years and decided that we wanted to get off the boat and didn't want to move back to Cleveland, Ohio for some reason.
Good decision.
And
how'd you learn about it?
A bartender from Marathon was coming down, and she worked for Carrico Real Estate and said, well, why don't you come on down? Because Eastern Airlines had a $99 round trip special from Miami. We said, okay. So we came down, stayed at the Hotel Playa de Nassar with John. We were going to be here 2 weeks. I had the whole country mapped out, you know, since it's only this big. And we never left. And she showed us what used to be Giardino Tropical. Was a house for sale. Now the gardens, I guess.
Yep, the gardens and El Locale for new folks.
She didn't have the key to the house, so we had to take the hinges out of the door to get in. It's a big piece of property. It's almost a hectare. It came with a pickup truck, and there were no vehicles back then. So that was like the clinchers. Bought the property when we got back to Marathon and moved here in October of 89.
Gotcha. So in 89, you set up what went from your house into Giardino and then presently into the gardens and El Locale, where that restaurant is. Hey, shout out to those guys for the benefit. Tell us real quick what happened the other night.
The other night, there's a gourmet chef's group of sixth graders from Del Mar Academy that sponsored a dinner to support a more, whatever it's called, more de animales, de nosara. Primary is capture release of feral cats, spay, neuter, but they help with the Nosara animal care, with dogs, getting them all adopted out, and all proceeds went to Amore, and there were over 60 people there. I didn't go. It's too late for me. It was the kids were very proud, the food was good, and I guess it was a really good turnout.
Yeah. George is the owner there, and he's a big fan of supporting the animals in the area. So shout out to him and El Locale. Let's move back into your stuff. So you set up here in 1989. What was the place like as far as just empty beaches and unparalleled?
I could walk naked down the beach.
It was that empty?
Right. If I saw somebody, I'd put my sarong back on. But that's before I found out I'm allergic to the sun. Good thinking here. You know, the baby were 10 full-time families living here.
Okay.
When we were at the house, we knew every vehicle that went by the sound of it.
How'd you guys communicate?
CB radio. Attention Nosara, attention Nosara, Transiso, San Quentro. But nobody had motorcycles at that time. So most people were on bicycles or walking.
Or horse.
And then we went to marine radios. And I don't think we got telephones until 97 or 98. And when those came in, I think that's when it opened the doors, because communication was so much greater. Before that, you would go to the Gilded Iguana, one of the few public telephones, and wait in line, wait for your turn, get your stopwatch, go around the corner, time your call to wherever it is, and then pay up. Sometimes there was a long line. By the time you got to your turn, you forgot who you were going to call. So,
gotcha. So if it was that remote, what kept you here?
You know, we used to see deer, tempest squid eyes, jacarandes, all rabbits, all over the place.
Right in Quiones.
Where Nosara's Escape is, that's where a lot of animals lived because that was a big, huge piece of property. You know, I had jacarandis coming in my yard. My husband and I raised a margay that we stole from somebody trying to sell it for a year, and that was like the best year of my life, raising that beautiful little cat.
Wow.
Yeah. And somebody posted the margay that they saw at the Harmony the other day, said, must be Kasiki's great, 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 great grandchild.
Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But you and Bill have told me so many stories over the years, from the deer that used to live inside of Super Nosara.
Mm-hmm.
To, wasn't there a pet monkey named Felix there too or something?
Tony and Ziggy, who live where Jorge the horse guy lives, right by the Subibaja, had a pet monkey. And then I think he finally let it go. I think it was a white face. And then it hung out with another white face. And when we used to do yoga at Estancia, it'd come over and steal like your frozen water bottle, you know, get some water. They were very bold. There's a house right next door to La Agua Viva that I used to manage, that that used to come in all the time, Tay and Cafe. One of my jobs was to go over and make sure they had cookies every other day. And then I realized, well, cookies probably aren't the best thing. But then they moved into Agua Viva. I'd see them walking across the beams and going into the kitchen and coming out with a banana. It's pretty cool.
So as we're sitting here right now, we're recording, it's mid-June 2019.
Mm-hmm.
We have a proposed temporary zoning plan that's being put in place, which is almost a little bit of a minor shock that it would happen, because so many of us had just been, we'll get a plan regulador when we get one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Same, it's moving about the same pace of the road. And then now we have this in front of us right now. And it's not without controversy. It wasn't received extremely well in the manner that it happened. But where we're at right now is Nicoya is listening, mm-hmm. and people are communicating at a level unlike ever before, no matter what opinion you have. And right. It's kind of exciting to see that happen. Number one, that we might have a plan. It looks like something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, that people did actually get to give some feedback. So
I've heard they've already made some changes, you know, that. So it's not quite affecting the Tico's lot size and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. the social economic part of it. But originally, the original plan for this whole place was it was all supposed to be residential, not one commercial. That was going to be where Estancia is or was,
mm-hmm.
by Five Corners, which is now how many corners?
Just now like 3.5 or kind right. of, it's different.
Right. But that's where the commercial area was going to be. And you know, there wouldn't be all these bars. There wouldn't be.
That's interesting. So back in the day, I guess,
mm-hmm.
the plan was for people, a lot of people might not know where Estancia is. So it's on the dump road, as we call it,
mm-hmm.
that goes back towards Del Mar and the L section.
Thank you.
So that was where the commercial was supposed to begin there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it seems like the exact opposite happened. There's nothing there.
Well, it was, I think there was a restriction also on lot size. And then, but INVU, which is the urbanization government, it's one little piece of paper never got signed during the whole process. It was supposed to be approved by INVU, any development, and it didn't get. And then when I was on the board of the NCA in 94, the president and I went to INVU to try and reinstate that.
Mm-hmm.
But we needed the signature of 100% of the property owners, which at that time we still didn't even know. And we know who the lefts are, you know.
You may as well ask for a rock off the moon by mm-hmm. next week. Like that's a...
Well, that happened, you know. We got a rock off the moon.
Oh, well, I'm saying if you need a new one by next week, though, that's the...
No.
That's the equivalent of trying to line up everyone in Nosara to cooperate, communicate, especially back then.
Right. I mean, and nobody knew anybody. There were fewer property owners now. Now there are 806 water meters, you know, and a lot of those service more than one business or house. And, you know, the Nosara Civic Association, I don't think anybody knows who it is because everything's in a corporation. And there's no real way to contact that person, because if they apply for a water permit, you know, it's the architect or the builder that's signing all the papers.
So basically it comes back to the reason why we didn't have a plan in place was a technicality and a slip of the pen way back when, and you guys could never get that reinstated, essentially.
Correct.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that story. That's very interesting to hear. So let me ask you this. How did we come out as good as we did? And I know the answer, but I want someone listening to hear it from you. How did the community come out as good as it did, given that we haven't had something in place? Because if you look up and down the Pacific coast of Costa Rica, we're still completely different. Now, I'm not saying it hasn't changed. It obviously has, especially from your perspective. But people still show up every day. They're like, this place is amazing. It's beautiful. Look at these parklands. What the heck? How'd this happen?
You know, the Del Sur Civic Association was set up originally as a homeowners association, but it has no legal power whatsoever, and everything was voluntary. But I think it was basically peer pressure and appreciation for what is here. You know, back then we'd say, go out and take a look where the monkeys are walking. You know, don't cut that tree. You know, try and work your building around that. And, you know, when we first came, everybody bought as much land as they could to protect themselves and nature. I mean, the old retired people that paid $3,000 for, you know, a 2,000 square meter lot, you know, bought several just so they, and
so it was the type of visitor and you guys basically using social pressure to the new people who came in who were very receptive to the idea. So it sounds like there was a good bit of luck that totally coincided.
Totally, because nothing could be enforced. Even the regulations that existed were not being enforced by the Muni, you know, for the building. Sorry, Osway.
This is before his time.
Right. Right. He was pretty young when I came. I think it was luck, appreciation, you know, and then all of a sudden a whole new generation came. Nobody had children back then.
Okay.
Or if they did, they were grown and gone.
Gotcha. It was not a family-oriented
type of place. You know, at the Iguana, we had a Mother's Day party in August, and there were 15 of us non-mothers, you know.
Gotcha.
And somebody went, no, you're not allowed.
So it was almost like a more rugged type of nature-oriented.
Pretty much.
Those were kind of the founders.
You know, we entertained our, you know, there were bridge clubs. We had beach parties all the time, you know, because there were so few people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sand sculpting, kite flying, you know, sort of group events that we all participated in, and potluck dinners, plays put on.
Sounds pretty fun.
It was fun.
So would you say the reason we don't have the condo towers and we don't look like Tamarindo, Capos, Dominicao, Jaco, or any of these places, would you say the reason we are was just luck of the draw? The people who came in respected the environment and wanted to keep it that way?
Pretty much.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Now, you're also known as an enforcer, and you have a lot of friends who respect you, and I think you're the godmother of Nosara, in my opinion. Like that label or not, that's...
If I find a horse in my bed, I'm going to be really upset.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But the point I'm getting is you have a lot of enemies as well from the past. Now, for you to have this polarizing nature and people to love you or hate you this much, there must be a reason for that. In your words, what is it?
Well, I oppose some legal actions that people have done. And so then, you know, when they get busted, they're not really happy with me.
I got you.
And I think I still make enemies all the time. You know, they're not old enemies. I think I'm making new ones.
You see, really?
I think so. Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't get here full time until early 2009. And at that time, it seemed like you were at your zenith. You were at the height. But then it seems like, I don't know. You were just about to tell us earlier. It seems like a generation seems to change every so often. So you were here in 1989, not family oriented at all. By 1999, still probably not as much. Then the private schools start coming early 2000s, and then families start rolling in. And then by 2009, 2010, it's turned into a lot of families are around. And then you fast forward to today, it's a family oriented community. And a lot of your time and effort is putting into educating the children. So it's very interesting how it started off completely opposite and look where we are today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, education has always, of children has always been primary. You know, all the wonderful organizations that the monkey, the animals, the, you know, are doing educational programs, the recycle for the children, because that's where you have to start people learning and appreciate. I mean, when we first came, dogs were not taken care of at all. Skin and bones. You couldn't even buy dog food here. Mm. I had to make dog food.
I remember that recipe. I think maybe you emailed me one time. You guys used to have recipes for dog food, and you shared all this knowledge amongst the people who were here back
then. Well, there was an old cookbook, the Gracious Jungle cookbook, that had that recipe in it. And I ended up having to buy, we had to buy a freezer because, you know, we had four dogs and six cats or whatever. And
so like in 89 to 99, was the stray animal population an issue at that point in time, or did that happen along the way? And then fast forward today, now we have a moratorium and no stray animal care and whatnot. But back in the day, you didn't have any of these things. What was it like then?
I started bringing in vets from San Jose to do spay neuter clinics at Giardino Tropical on the porch.
This is in the 90s.
You know, you'd come to my house with your animal on a leash, and you'd wait in what was a guest house then, and would serve Bloody Marys. And then when it was your turn, you went up to the vet, and, you know, they didn't do the quantity that Safari is doing now. Well, there weren't that many animals, but, you know, it was a start. And then I don't know when we started getting real dog food.
Probably about the time Super Nosara went from a ragtag type of place into an actual store. Hey, talk us through shopping here. What was it like when you first got here to 99, 09, up to now? What was the shopping experience? Because you and others have shared a lot of interesting tales with me.
Super Nosara was the only place, which was where Jerry's hardware store, Jerry and Carlone's hardware store used to be. Small building, the house that's still there. And I don't think I ate lettuce because it wasn't available for at least 10 years, and you had to go.
Terry Lewis told me a story one time. I think he said the Paloma was...
That's where I was going to go, yeah.
The Paloma was where the vegetable truck would come, and everyone would be out there fighting over a rutabaga or something.
And Antonio Mendez started bringing... La Paloma was another little tiny... It was more like a pupuria and a restaurant. But Antonio started Mendez, who now runs La Paloma, started bringing in vegetables once a week. And it really was a fight. I was trying to get him to bring in fresh mushrooms. And I looked up mushrooms in the dictionary, and it was champignon. And he didn't know what, you know, they don't have hongos in the Spanish-English dictionary. And so I drew a picture, and he's like, "You want what?" I'm not a really good artist, you know.
But that's what it was like back then. You literally waited on a vegetable truck to show up and get what you could.
Well, he finally took orders, I think. Wow. And then you had to, it was number, because it really was like, you know, Macy's department store grabbing everything and stuff.
So when did the stores start getting going, like the Super Nosaras, the Palomas, and whatnot?
I don't really remember. I don't know.
I can say from my experience from 2009 to 2019, it's incredibly different.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have anything here. When we moved down here, we brought a 20-quart, is that that big, huge cooler? Mm-hmm. Full of stuff. You know, like spices, horseradish sauce, Worcestershire sauce, tampons. You know, they didn't even have tampons.
So just basic stuff. You had to bring everything in.
Mm-hmm.
And then to get to Nicoya, how long did it take you to get to Nicoya? Or dare I say,
about the same time as it does today.
We just have a couple more bridges in place now.
Sometime last year I went, and it took me longer last year than it did 30 years ago, with no bridges and no pavement. The pavement stopped right outside of Nicoya. That was it.
So I guess the road's a whole nother subject. I guess you don't feel too fondly towards it.
Oh, I think, they have to pave it for health reasons. You know, I was opposed to for many years.
When did you change your mind that pavement's good for the road? Because I get asked that almost on a daily basis, especially after we did the last road podcast. People are like, don't do that. You're going to ruin Nosara. And I was like, no, I think we're past that, guys. We need
the
to
health
pave
issues.
It.
I used to volunteer at Esperanza School, which is right there on the road. And I think Ralph Summers set up a guy to count the vehicles that went by, and within 3 hours, it was like 300 vehicles, and nobody slows down. And, you know, the noise, distraction, the dust.
Sheer amount of dust hitting that school is crazy.
And now, you know, people walking the roads, riding bicycles. Mm. I mean, even the cars, you know, with the windows open, you're breathing all this stuff, and it's horrible. And
for me, it was around 2013-14 when the first wave of new tourists came. Like, Nosara never really had big publicity all this time you've been here until I think it was late 2013 when the first like major article hit, like the New York Times, and then it turned into National Geographic, and then it just started spinning from there. And then your average visitors came rolling in, and the rental cars, and they're just hitting that school. And that's when it kind of hit me, as people are walking all over the place. There's more people coming into Gionis and Pallotta for jobs and whatnot. And it went from, I want to keep Nosara small and enjoy what we have, to this is actually an ethical issue now at this point. The respiratory cases went through the roof, and they still are to this day.
Yeah, I mean, all the quad rentals and all of that, you know, you see a trail of 13 quads with two people going to tear havoc up in the mountains, and they're having a good old time. And sometimes, you know, there's a 5-year-old driving the thing.
That's a whole other subject.
Or the parents let their kids drive it around the hood, you know, and kids are out there doing donuts in the middle of the road, and, you know, they don't know how to drive.
They don't. The good news, at least in the past year or two, we're having a little bit less instances of. And this is a shout out to the providers of the quads and the golf carts. They truly have been talking with the tourists and say, hey, we know you're on vacation, but please don't let your kid drive. It's unsafe. Sometimes people drive way too fast still.
Right. I mean, some of the companies, like I'll say Limo Dan, is very responsive. You know, if I see a 5-year-old driving, I'll let Limo Dan, your vehicle number 5 just went by with this young kid driving headed towards the main road, you know?
So you're a bit of an enforcer. So in years past, if someone was doing something that you felt was wrong, you're the person who called it in.
Yeah, I'm a Kobe Reina, which is for Manai, and it's like a volunteer deputy.
Right.
Somebody called me yesterday. A lot was clear cut. Every single tree cut down.
That's unfortunate.
Next to a parkland. And so I don't know how that's going to affect the water flow through there. So after this, I have to go check on it. But, I would go to people that cutting trees down and ask for their permits, you know. And sometimes some people were nice and other times not very.
I got you. So instances like this, is this where you got your reputation, where people are scared of you? And you were referred to yesterday, someone called you a powerful force. Mm. And I know you as Bobby, who used to come to my daughter's Girl Scout meetings, and I've always been friends with you. But I've also seen the other side, and I've heard the stories, and you've told me dozens of them alone. So I'm trying to help someone listening this get to know you a little bit, and your presence here and how much you care about the place. And maybe if someone hears something bad, maybe you were out there calling on someone, but you weren't doing it for the wrong reasons. You were doing it because you were trying to do
something
good.
I mean,
good.
People still call me, and I've told, you know, this guy was in San Jose, notified me of what had happened because somebody else had called him. And it's like, well, you can call Manai as well as I. And, you know, now you're asking me to go after the fact. So what's going to happen? We don't have witnesses. We don't, you know, probably don't know who the owner is and what kind of recourse can, you know, make that better.
Well, it's like they were looking at you as the sheriff. You right. turned into the de facto sheriff.
Well, for Manai, I did a lot.
Okay. Well, I'd say for the Civic Association and also just in general, because I've never seen you just do something because it was one group or another. I just see it's just part of who you are, is you care about the place and you're not scared to speak up whenever you feel it's appropriate.
Right. I mean, the list you know, I give a giant hand to the community of Nosara for how much it does give back to everything, to the recycle center, to the animals, the monkeys, the dogs, the cats, the food bank, the library, all
and
of that.
On and on and on.
Right, security. Fortunately, you don't get enough, but, you know, the bomberos. Mm-hmm. And it's so too bad, in my opinion, that there's so many people that have come in here with the attitude, oh, it's so beautiful, I'm going to build my mansion, you know, on my million-dollar lot, and they give nothing back. I'm treasurer of a lot of organizations, and I know who gives and who doesn't. And it just really upsets me that, you know, people aren't giving back to the community, which they supposedly love.
So let's talk about that for a moment. And this is a consistent theme on the podcast. Nosara's already experienced the growth. We can't go back in time and be like, well, let's not make it popular. Those days are gone. It's already popular. It's everywhere. It's number one spot in Costa Rica to come for the most part at this point. Mm-hmm. For people who are interested in nature and whatnot. Ironically, all the people coming in and the new services and facilities and buildings are what's taking the very nature away, which is your point. And we'll talk more about that as we go. But here's what I'm getting at. My belief is that the solution to the vast majority of our problems is the people coming in. Because mm-hmm. the people coming in now, they do have money. You mentioned earlier someone buying a $1 million lot, building a mansion. Here's the irony, Bobby, and I'll tell you this. I work in the belly of the beast. This is not a mansion to those people. Mm-hmm. This is their like getaway home. This is like their summer home or something. Like it's not that people are coming and saying, let me spend every dime I have to get here. That's what it used to be. Like 99 to 09, people would bet the farm, come down, get a small little home, and just be happy to be here. Mm-hmm. It's transitioned. The people coming in now have money. They do. Right. The vast majority of your entire time here, were basically squeezing blood from turnips all over the place to raise capital for things. Mm-hmm. And now here we have an abundance of capital. But people, I'd like to think they just don't know how to get involved, or they don't know where to get involved.
Probably, I don't know who they are. Because when there's a cause, you know, I'd say, hey, Rich, give me $20. You go, okay, what for? You know? Right. And, you know, and then I'd tell
that's the difference in the generations, though. Like, you've never had to tell me whatever you needed. You just mm-hmm. called. You're like, hey, I need you to send this. And I was mm-hmm. like, all right.
Okay.
Yep. Like, but I don't have the zeros behind my donations at the level of the people who are coming in.
Right.
So what do we do about that?
I have no idea. I don't know how to get to know. I mean, if anybody seeing this is curious, a lot of people know how to get in touch with me.
Right. Well, we still have friends in Nosara out there. And a lot of the people, mm-hmm. they don't know that there's a buffet of services. You can find the trees. You can find the monkeys. You can find the mercy homes. You can find the security, the bomberos, on and on and on. But what we don't need in this town is the same people who've been doing this for the past 10, 20 years to continue doing it for the next 10, 20 years. And those are the same primary sources of funding. We need to get into the new folks.
Right.
Now, here's the positive, in my opinion. And this is, again, this is one of the inspirations for the podcast. I want people to hear this and realize, mm-hmm. oh, Nosara, our whole area literally gets by off of us. We have very little government funding. Mm-hmm. The schools, the public schools, just take a look. Like the public funding is basically non-existent. Mm-hmm. And the green areas, that was what you guys fought for back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, it's not like where people come from Manhattan or Canada or Europe or wherever the heck they're coming from, where everything's already in place and there's civil services provided by the government. We have to do this ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone from every industry in the past getting involved is how we made this thing happen. But now we have people who have money coming in. How do we pull them in? Well, this is also why I want to do a community center. I think you know my long-term objective.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to get from real estate into doing a community center that bridges the Tico community and the Gringo community. The Gringos can go learn Spanish. The Ticos can come learn English. They have activities between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. It's hot. There's not really much to do. At night we can have TED Talks and different people can come in. Like, that's what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to raise the capital for that, but I know it's out there. So I'm hoping people will listen to this and get us there. You used to have to go door to door though, phone to phone, office to office, which you're still doing to this day, and shout out to you. But what I'm saying is it's 2019. I think we need to up it. I think we need to get deeper mm-hmm. into the people coming in and say, hey, it's Nosara. You're welcome. We're happy you're here. Okay, you build a house. That's great. Now get involved. And not a little, a lot. And if you can't volunteer physically, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Stroke a check. Here's any number of organizations that this could land at, because you can't physically do it. And we have technology now. And also, they have money. The people coming right. in, they want to give back too. They don't want the nature to go away, right. which is so interesting, because your point is that, hey, the nature's all going away, and that's why we need a zoning plan. So I guess there's a lot of subjects I'm ranting on here.
I was doing the collection for the Recycle Center to try and keep it going mm-hmm. because I think it's $4,500 a month of operating expenses, and the income off the sale of the recyclables after process, well, this is whatever, processing is time consuming and everything mm-hmm. else, it's maybe $500,
right?
So, you know, we're asking, I have a list of almost 1,000 emails. I don't know who, you know, Blue Zone Zero at Gmail is,
right.
but, and so, you know, we're trying to, that's the only basis I have. You know, I have water, I have NCA
right.
lists, I have my own list that, you know, I put it all together, and, you know, some people have donated, and then their wife gets a, well, we already gave. I'm like, oh, well, I don't know that that's your wife, you know?
Right. Well, now you have this platform. You're here right now. So say it. Let people listening say whatever you want to them right here.
For any project in this community, Friends of Nosara, which really doesn't exist anymore. It, now all funds go through Amigos de Costa Rica, which is a U.S. corporation and Costa Rican tax deductible both, to, you can make a donation via them. You know, you can do it to, I think there are 30 organizations or something like that on the